All right, morning, y'all. Okay, it's Fusion Sunday. I like Fusion Sunday. I do. I like having all the kids, everybody together, all with their kids. I know that it's stressful for some of you, but it shouldn't be, because what we're going to do today is we're going to think about stuff that people have been thinking about for centuries, for millenniums. We're going to talk about stuff that people have been thinking about for millenniums. In fusion churches since the beginning of time. And it's right on the verge of a brand new year. Now, is there anybody that doesn't like New Year's? Is there anybody that has some disdain? I'm a person who doesn't care for New Year's. I'm me and Bill. And the rest of you guys are ready to party like it's 1999. New Year's is a source of stress for many people because it is a marking of the passage of time, right? It's hard to escape the reality that another year is past. You know, just a little over a year ago, we were anticipating 2019. Oh my gosh, and now 2019 is over, and we're getting ready to go into 2020. And so the New Year's creates some anxiety. Because we're faced with the reality that time is marching on, and things are changing. Now, the question I want to start with is there anybody who likes change? Is there anybody who likes it when things are different? Anybody like that? This is not a rhetorical question. I'm actually looking for, do you like change? What do you like about change?
I like positive change.
Positive change. So you put in a qualifier that I didn't put in. Okay, you like positive change, like when the light turns from red to green.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Is there anybody who we'll leave that qualifier in there? Is there anybody who likes positive change? That's probably everybody. But is there anybody who has anxiety when things are different? When things are, yeah. What do you not like about change? Right. Like when we have problems in the. With the, does that create anxiety for anybody? Anybody get nervous when things don't go like they're supposed to go on stage? Besides the people on stage? Yeah. That creates some anxiety, doesn't it? I mean, when things are kind of haywire, it makes everybody a little uncomfortable, right? All right. Is there anybody who doesn't like change? Where are my people? The people who prefer that everything would stay the same. What do you not like about change, Joe?
It means I have to learn something new.
It means you have to learn something new. Right. It means you're going into uncharted territory sometimes. When things change, it means, oh my gosh, I don't have a plan for this, and I got to figure it out. Which is awful. Okay. Just for purposes of complete clarity, I am the guy who likes to find a rut and get in it. I want to find a rut, and I want to get in it and never leave it. Because in a rut, everything is the same, everything goes according to plan, and I don't have to think about stuff. All right? So that's me. So when the new year comes around, I have some anxieties. Because what's going to happen in 2020? Oh my gosh, what's going on? What are we going to do? Is things going to be the same? Am I going to have the same job? Are all of my people going to stay alive this year? Are we going to move? I mean, there's a lot of things that could potentially happen to knock me out of my rut. So the thing that I want to talk about is hopefully something that you will be able to talk about on the way home. These are the kind of questions that I love to have conversations with members of my family about. And hopefully you will be able to have these conversations maybe on the way home. Here's the first question. This was a statement that was made by a Greek philosopher 500 years before Jesus was born. That's how old this has been around. A guy named Heraclitus. And you know he's old because nobody names their kid Heraclitus anymore. And if they did, you certainly wouldn't listen to what he had to say. Here's what Heraclitus said. He said, no man steps into the same river twice. No man steps into the same river twice because it is not the same river and he is not the same man. You think that's true? See some hands. Okay, you think it's not true? How many of you are not going to raise your hand no matter what I ask? Okay. All right. I'm just going to get a feel for the room. No man steps into the same river twice. What does that mean? Someone want to take a shot at that?
The water moved, so the river changed.
The water moves, so the river changes.
Time changes, so the guy changes.
And time changes, so the guy changes. Very good. Have you contemplated this before?
Well, I contemplate what you said.
Okay. No man steps in the same river twice. But yet, if you asked a person, are you stepping into the same river, we would say yes. Right? We don't think of it as a different river. So there's something about a river that makes us think that it's staying the same, even though we know it's not. Even though we know the water is passing through it, and it's not technically the same river. But something is holding that river together, even as the water goes through it. Right? And that's what Heraclitus and that's what the philosophers have been thinking about for a long time before any of us got there. The question is, what is it that identifies that river? How is it that we define that river? So I got another story. This is a story about a ship. And I made this ship myself. Out of Legos. Thank you. Thank you. You are the most appreciative group. So far, no one else has applauded today for my Lego skills. All right. This is a ship. Ship's about ready to go on a journey, but before the ship goes on a journey, we got to give the ship a name. So whoever sticks their hand up first gets to name the ship. Of course, I'm sorry, it's Paul. What do you want to name it, Paul?
The Fairfield Floater.
Say it loud.
The Fairfield Floater.
The Fairfield Floater? I wish somebody else had been faster. Fairfield Floater is not. All right, I'm stuck with it. All right, so the Fairfield Floater sets off on its journey across the ocean. And it's several months into the journey when a huge storm blows up, a giant storm. Sky gets black, the wind starts to blow, the rain starts to pelt, and the sails are blown so hard that it actually pulls the mast off of our ship. And out into the water. So now we don't have any sails anymore, and the mast is gone. And so the ship is at the mercy of the ocean, and the rain continues to drive, and the wind continues to blow, and the waves wash the ship, fortunately, lucky for us, into a harbor. So it goes up against the dock in the harbor, and the ship people say, hey, it looks like you guys could use a new mast. And we say, yeah, we sure could, because the old Fairfield Floater doesn't have a mast, doesn't have a sail. So they say, we can fix you up. And so they put a brand new mast right in the middle of our ship, and off we go, brand new mast, ready to go. Now, question, what's the name of the ship?
Fairfield Floater.
Okay, brand new mast, same ship. All right, so the captain is happy. This is the captain here. And he makes his way across, and when he gets to the next port, he discovers that there's a bunch of barnacles growing on the back end of the ship, bunch of little sea creatures that burrow into the wood. And when the barnacles stick to the wood, they make it so that the hull doesn't have the same integrity. It's not watertight anymore. So now we have to take the whole back part of the ship off and replace it because it leaks. So they take the whole back of the ship off, fortunately, and replace it with a brand new, squeaky clean, watertight back into the ship. And off we go on our journey. Now, real quick question. What's the name of the ship?
Fairfield Floater.
Okay, we got a new mast and a new, entirely new back end. Same ship? Okay, so the captain moves to the back of the ship, sensing that the front of the ship might be in danger. And and sure enough, a sea monster comes up and wraps its tentacles around the front of the ship before we get to the port and crushes it, smashes pieces of it off so that it's gone. And the ship is taken on water. However, because our captain was savvy enough to realize that that there could be some danger, he steers it into a local island. There's not an actual port there, but there is some trees, and they cut them down, and they're able to fashion a brand new front of the ship. And they attach it. Oops. Oh, no. Thank goodness this is the last service. Because the ship is not going to make it through another service. Oh, I broke it. That's not even going to fit. All right. Still works. All right. Yeah, hypothetically. So off we go from the island, and we finally make it to our final port. We pull into the port, up to the dock, safe and sound. Now my question, is this the same ship that we started out with? Same ship that we started out with? You say the foundation? So that's the question that you ask. Is this the same ship? Is it the same ship if you replace every single board, every single sail, every single rigging? Is it the same ship? The name's the same. Is it the same Fairfield floater? This is a question that people have been asking for a long, long, long time because it goes to identity. It goes to a thing called identity. Whether or not you believe this is the same ship depends on how you define the ship. If the ship is defined by the sum of its parts, if all of the boards and the sails and the riggings combined, if that's what makes up the ship, then the answer is no. It's not the same ship. It wasn't the same ship when we replaced the mast. It's been a series of different ships all the way across. But that doesn't really seem right to us, does it? I mean, we think of this as the same beloved Fairfield floater that we started out with. Because there's something about the ship that goes beyond just the parts, right? The ship is not just the boards, it is not just the riggings. There's something else that defines the ship for us. Now, I was looking at my kids' pictures recently. Down the hall by the bathroom, we have a little shrine, a very little shrine to our children. It's got all of our kids' baby pictures up on the back wall, everybody except Andrew. But Andrew's our fourth, and, you know, you just don't care about the last one as much as you do. So we got pictures of him. But we got all the kids' baby pictures up on the wall, And by the way, he was here last service, so he held his coffee cup up when I said that, so he's cool with the fact that we've ignored him. But I'm looking at my kids' pictures, and it's little baby Mandy and baby Tim and baby Tabby, and they're little bitty babies in these pictures. And it occurred to me, as I was looking at those pictures, that those children are gone. Those children don't exist anymore. And the same thing is true for the kids that are sitting next to you today. You know, next year, those kids are going to be gone, one way or the other. That creates a little bit of anxiety, doesn't it? A little bit of sadness to think that all of those babies that we held so dear are not in existence anymore? Or are they? Do they still exist? It's sort of like the ship, right? You've got a baby. And as it sets sail across the ocean, it gets bigger and it changes and the parts get replaced. So is it the same person? Are you the same person that you were in 2019? I looked this up because somebody told me that we replace every cell in our body every year. Anybody else heard that? Anybody else heard that every cell in your body gets replaced every year? I wasn't sure if it was true or not, so I looked it up. And it turns out it's sort of true. This is what I got from Live Science. Every 7 years or 10 years, depending on which story you hear, we become essentially new people. Because at that time, every cell in your body has been replaced by a new cell. Every 7 to 10 years, every cell in your body is replaced with a new cell. So don't you feel younger than you were 7 years ago? It's true that individual cells have a finite lifespan, and when they die off, they're replaced with new ones. Red blood cells live 4 months. White blood cells live about a year. Skin cells live 2 or 3 weeks. So every 2 or 3 weeks, you've got brand new skin. Colons, the cells in your colon, die off every 4 days. So it is tough to be a colon. So the question for the ship also applies to you. Are you the same person? You've got a brand new vessel, an entirely new vessel than what you had last year. So are you the same person? And while technically we know we can't step into the same river twice, and we know that it's not technically the same ship, we sort of feel like we are the same person, don't we? Where does that come from? How do we get the idea that we're the same person, even as our cells are completely replaced every 10 years? Even as we grow. Just out of curiosity, does anybody know George Washington's birthday? Just stick your hand up if you know. If you know when George Washington, do you really know George Washington's birthday? That's amazing. Okay. Did anybody else know it? Do you know what year? You know what year? Okay. Okay. That's amazing. That's right. George Washington was born February 22nd, 1732. February 22nd, 1732. All right, so say it with me. February 22nd, 1732. All right. Every single person in this room is different now than they were 30 seconds ago. Except for Chicky. Because everybody has new information that you didn't have 30 seconds ago. So my question is, are you the same person? You kind of are, aren't you? You sort of feel like you are. Because we don't define who we are by the things that we know, by the facts that we have in our head. We don't think that we are different now because we know George Washington's birthday. And when we forget George Washington's birthday, as most of you will before this is even over, that's going to be another change. Because now you will have forgotten something that you used to know. And so the anxiety creeps up again. Am I the same person? The old brain doesn't work like it used to. I don't think the way I used to think. Am I the same person? Change, when it happens, and it always happens, creates this anxiety. It creates a crisis of existence at our core level. When we see our babies grow up, when we see loved ones pass away, when we move, when we undergo dramatic changes in life, make us uneasy. Because we kind of like things to stay the same. We kind of like things to stay predictable. We kind of like things to stay comfortable because we have a plan for that. We know how to respond when this happens. We don't know how to respond when an octopus wraps itself around the front of our ship. So what do we do? What's the Christian response? Or what's the Christian way to deal with change? I think the answer's in Genesis. I think that God knew that we were going to be sitting here in almost 2020, and he knew that some of us, not all of us, but a few of us were going to have some anxiety about the coming new year. Because some of us have anxiety about every coming new year. Because we don't know what's going to happen. And I think God knew that we were going to have some questions like, am I the same person now that I don't think the way I used to think? Or now that I am recovering from a serious illness and I maybe don't have the same physical capabilities that I used to have? Am I still the same person? I think God knew that those questions were going to plague not just you, but people that lived 500 years before Jesus was born. I think God knew we needed answers. And so he provided it right at the very beginning of the Bible. Now, I was successfully able to send Brian Davis the wrong scripture reference. And so we're not going to put it up on the screen because it's wrong. But it's Genesis 1:26, if you want to look it up or make a note. Genesis 1:26. And God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, and the cattle, and all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So right there in Genesis, first chapter of Genesis, God says, let us make man in our image. In the image of God, he made you. So what does it mean to be made in the image of God? Clearly, it doesn't mean that you have all of God's parts, right? Because God doesn't even have parts. God can't have parts. But God doesn't have a body. So being made of the in the image of God doesn't mean that you're fashioned to look like God looks. It's got to mean something else. So what does it mean? How does being in the image of God change the way we think and feel about change? I think that answer comes in the New Testament. In Hebrews chapter 13, this one we do have on the screen. Hebrews chapter 13 says, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. Now, depending on how you define Jesus, that's not true, right? Because we just finished Christmas. We just went through Christmas, and we were told that Jesus started out as an itty-bitty little baby, right? Just this little baby that fit neatly in a manger. And then that baby grew up and became an adult who hung on a cross and died. And then that dead guy rose again to life. That's some pretty significant changes from a guy who supposedly is the same yesterday, today, and forever, right? He went from a baby to an adult to a dead guy to alive again. That's not the same, unless we're talking about something other than the sum of Jesus' parts. Unless we're not talking about his physical body. Unless something else about Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And I think it is. To put a final piece in the puzzle, you can turn to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 16 says, "Do not be deceived, beloved brothers. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change." Every good gift comes from God, in whom, some translations say, there is no shadow of turning. No shadow of turning. There's a hymn that says, "There is no shadow of turning in thee. Thou changest not, thy compassions, they fail not." What does that mean? Can't be talking about physical parts. Can't be talking about the sum of the pieces altogether. There's something else about God that doesn't have a shadow of turning. Now, I wasn't able to do this with the earlier services because we didn't have any children. But is there anybody who doesn't know exactly what makes shadows work? Anybody have a theory on where shadows come from? Who's like below the age of about 7? Anybody want to cast? Anybody wondered about that? You wonder about what makes a shadow? Do you know what a shadow is? Have you seen it? Seen a shadow? When you walk, you can see it looks like you, except it's flat. There was a time in history when even grown-up people didn't know why shadows existed. There were people, grown-up people, who didn't know what a shadow was. It's hard to imagine, some of you grown-ups, but there was a time when even you big people, shadows were mysteries. The ancient people, when this scripture was written, remember, this was before we discovered that the earth revolves around the sun, you know, and the earth rotates. This was before we knew that. And they're writing, "There is no shadow of turning in God." Why would they write that? Because the ancient people used to go outside and they would notice that their shadow was here in the morning. And then throughout the day, the shadow made its way around until in the evening they could stand in the same place and the shadow was pointing in a whole different direction. I know, it doesn't freak you out, but it did them. Why wouldn't it? How does that make any sense that the shadow would just of its own move from one place to another? What causes that to happen? So the ancient people are saying, that doesn't happen with God. And that is an astounding thing for ancient people to say. That is an astounding thing for people of that time to notice. To notice that in God, there is no shadow of turning. He does not change. As time passes, he remains the same. How on earth would they ever know to write something like that? Unless they were told. So in God, there is no shadow of turning. God does not change. And guess what? You are made in the image of that God. So in you, it's not that there is no shadow of turning. Clearly, we all cast a shadow. But you're talking about the sum of your parts when you talk about that. What the scripture is talking about is the you that goes underneath the parts, the you that is separate from the sum of your parts. That is the you that does not change, because that is made in the image of God. There is something in you as we get ready to go into 2020, as we face the new year, as we face new anxieties, as we face new fears, as we face new uncertainties. What you are built around is the same thing that the ship is built around. It's a name. It's the image of God. God is base reality. He is where everything starts. And what's you are wrapped around that little bit of God that does not change. That doesn't mean your hair's not going to fall out, right? And it doesn't mean you're not going to get older. And it doesn't mean you're not going to learn when George Washington was born and then forget when George Washington was born. It doesn't mean any of that. All of those things are the parts. Those are the moving parts that make us up. But they are not the essence of who you are. Because you are not defined by the sum of your parts. And you're not defined by the knowledge in your head. And you're not defined by the experiences that you've had. You are defined by the image of God. All right, last question. This one's a little easier. Is this the same church? Is Fairfield Christian Church the same church that it's always been? I mean, it depends on how you're going to define a church, right? I mean, you're hip to this question now. If you define church by the sum of its parts, then no. This is not the same church that it was when I started coming here 30 years ago. It's way different than when I started coming here 30 years ago. We used to meet in the chapel over there. Some of you remember that. Not as many of you as used to, but some of you remember we used to meet over there. And that the chapel went all the way to the back. That was the whole church, really. And so that was where we met. And then we built this building. So this room here was actually a gymnasium when it started out. And there was basketball goals at both ends. I know. And there was a volleyball net that we could string across the middle. And we had some anxiety when we moved from this room over to this room. There were some people that didn't go with us. There were people that left because they didn't like the change. They thought, this is not the same church anymore. Just because we were meeting in a place that was 30 feet away from the place that we started out with. But it depends on how you define the church. And if you define the church as the sum of its parts, in other words, the staff, the order of worship, the location, the pews or the seats. We had some anxiety when we started putting words up on the screen. I know it's hard to believe. Some of you probably don't believe me. But we had people that really had heartburn when we moved from hymnals up to the screen. Because it's a change. And those people said, this doesn't feel like the same church. It just doesn't feel like the same church. And if you're thinking about the sum of the parts, then you're right. But if you define things by the sum of their parts, it's going to make you very sad for the rest of your life. Because no man can step into the same river twice. The river is moving, and time change, and children grow up, and people move away, and staff changes, and music changes. It all changes. And I don't like that. But I've got it on good authority that through it all, even as things are changing in a way that I don't like, through all of it, I am made in the image of God. And I am able to stand here with my feet firmly planted while everything changes around me. I can stand here and say with absolute certainty that I'm the same person. And I get that identity from the eternal, unchanging God. I don't get it from the mirror. I don't get it from the relationships. I don't get it from what people are telling me. I get it from the existence of God. And as everything changes, and my hair falls out and turns gray, or both, and as my children grow up, I'm the same. Because I'm made in the image of a God in whom there is no shadow of turning. So, if you're feeling some anxiety, if you're feeling some uncertainty about 2020, that's kind of understandable. I don't think you're alone in that. But hopefully in the coming year, you'll remember that even though the parts have been replaced on your ship, you're the same ship. Because you're not defined by those parts. You're not defined by those practices, and you're not defined by those beliefs. Those are all things that should be changed. If they're wrong, if they're broken, you can change them. But they don't fundamentally change who you are. Because your identity is not in those things. It's not with this church. It's not with that job. Your identity is in Christ. Your identity is in the unchanging, eternal image of God.